So thanks very much for the invitation. I'm going to speak about joint work with Stephen Karp, who is my student, who is here, and also and the other part is joint work with Stephen and with Yan Zheng, who is a postdoc at Berkeley and is now tenure track in San Jose. So let me give you an outline of my talk. I'll start by reviewing what is the tree amplituhedron. Lydia already gave a beautiful introduction to that, but I won't assume that people necessarily remember everything. And then I'm going to give a kind of orthogonal description of the amplituhedron and tell you what you can say about it using some tools from sign variation. And this is largely in the case m equals 1. And then I'll move on to the case m equals 4. So we have a very explicit description of the BCFW cells. And then I'll give some conjectures on numerology of the amplituhedron, which is now for general n, k, and m, and explain what we can prove about disjointness of BCFW cells. Okay, so the Grassmannian GRKN is the set of k-dimensional subspaces of a n-dimensional vector space. And I'm going to represent elements of the Grassmannian by full rank k by n matrices. And for J, a k-element subset of the numbers 1 through n, delta J of A is going to be the minor of A using Coulomb's J. So this is called a Pflücker coordinate. And now the totally non-negative Grassmannian is the subset of the real Grassmannian where Pflücker coordinates are always non-negative. And the totally positive Grassmannian is the same thing, but Pflücker coordinates are strictly positive instead of non-negative. Okay, so let me just review a little bit about the decomposition of the non-negative Grassmannian. So given script M, a collection of k-element subsets of 1 through n, so I'm thinking of this as a collection of Pflücker coordinates, S sub M is the subset of the non-negative Grassmannian where your Pflücker coordinate, delta J, is positive if and only if J lies in your collection M. So these are called positroid cells. And a theorem of Postnikov was that assuming this subset is non-empty, then SM is actually topologically an open ball, and we have a cell decomposition. So we have a decomposition into a disjoint union of these open cells. And these cells are in bijection with various nice combinatorial objects, decorated permutations. You can also think of them as affine permutations. What I would call reduced playback graphs, i.e. on-shell diagrams, and certain tableaux called Le diagrams, which will be a particularly important tool in this talk. So what is a Le diagram? So it's a Young diagram contained in a k by n minus k rectangle, and it's filled with, its boxes are filled with zeros and pluses, such that you never have a zero that has a plus above it in the same column and a plus to the left in the same row. So this is an example. And cells of the non-negative Grassmannian are in bijection with these objects. And what's nice about these objects is you can read off all points of the corresponding cell, either as matrices or in terms of their Pflücker coordinates. And you can also read off the dimension of the cell. The dimension of the corresponding cell is precisely the number of pluses. So if you're interested in, say, BCFW cells, then they should correspond to some Le diagrams with precisely 4k pluses inside. Okay, so now what is the amplituhedron? So let's let Z be a k plus m by n real matrix with maximal minors strictly positive. We get a map, which I'll call Z tilde, from the totally non-negative Grassmannian into the Grassmannian of k planes and k plus m space, just defined by matrix multiplication. So if A is a k by n matrix in the non-negative Grassmannian, so when I say it's a matrix in the Grassmannian, I mean it's a full rank k by n matrix, and I'm thinking of its row span as the element of the Grassmannian. So if A is such an element, then I'll simply multiply A by the transpose of Z. and this gives me a k by k plus m matrix, which is an element of the Grassmannian of k-planes in k plus m space. The fact that this matrix has full rank follows from the positivity assumption that we made on Z. So the map is well defined. And then they defined this tree, so Arkani Hamed and Yara Trinka, sorry, I left out a letter there. The tree amphitetrahedron is simply the image of the non-negative Grassmannian inside of our GRK K plus M Grassmannian. Please feel free to interrupt if there's questions. Okay, so now, so the image, so this amplitudehedron, which lives in this Grassmannian, has full dimension, which is dimension Km. And for M equals 4, the conjecture of Arkani Hamed and Trinka was that the BCFW cells, so which have dimension 4k, so this is some collection of 4k dimensional cells in the non-negative Grassmannian, should give a triangulation of the amplitudehedron. What I mean by that is that when you take your BCFW cell in this Grassmannian and push it over into the amplitudehedron, then that image, so the images of the different BCFW cells should all be disjoint, and together they should cover a dense subset of the amplitudehedron. Okay, so from a mathematical point of view, one very natural open question is, what is the topology of the amplitudehedron? And, well, a very natural question is that it should be homeomorphic to a closed ball. The main motivation for this conjecture is that the non-negative Grassmannian, which is a special case of an amplitudehedron, is conjecturally a closed ball, and there's overwhelming evidence that that should be true. This non-negative Grassmannian it's combinatorially a ball. The poset of cells is Schellebel and Eulerian. That's something I proved a number of years ago. And also it's contractible with boundary homotopy equivalent to a sphere. So everyone believes that this thing is a ball, and based on kind of small calculations, it also looks like the tree amplitudehedron in general should be a ball as well. Okay, so now let me give another way of thinking about the amplitudehedron. So recall it's sitting inside the Grassmannian of k-planes in k plus m space, but you guys normally care about small m, like m equals 4. So it would be nicer to work with the Grassmannian of m-planes in k plus m space instead of k, k plus m. So here's something that one can do. So let's let Z be a, you know, let Z be our Z matrix, which is our k plus m by n matrix with maximal minors positive. And let W be the row span of Z. So so it's a k plus m plane in Rn. So now let's define this object, BnKm of W. And now what we're going to do is the following. We look at the orthogonal complement of V, where V is an element in the non-negative Grassmannian, and we intersect it with W. So remember, in the usual amplitudehedron, your amplitudehedron would be defined as this C dot Z type map. You're multiplying your element in the non-negative Grassmannian by Z. And now we're doing something kind of orthogonal. Instead of doing a matrix multiplication, we're taking our element in the non-negative Grassmannian, taking its orthogonal complement, and intersecting with the row span of Z. And this object lies in the Grassmannian of M planes in W. And one can check that these two objects are homeomorphic. So you can really work with either one. The proof idea is that if you start with V perp intersect W, so if you start with your element of your B amplitudehedron, so this is an m-dimensional subspace of Rn, and then you take the orthogonal complement in Rn, you get V plus W perp. And now map this over by Z. Z applied to V gives Z of V, but Z annihilates W perp, and so you just get Z of V, which, and this thing is how you guys, how you know, how you guys originally defined the amplitudohedron. And so one just needs to check that this map is a homeomorphism. Okay, so now let me give a little bit of background on sign variation. And I think you'll hear more about sign variation in at least one talk later on today. So for V, a vector in Rn, let's let var of V, stands for variation of V, this is the number of times that V changes sign when you read its coordinates from left to right. So for V, the following vector, you start at plus, and then you go to negative. And so the sign changes once, so var of V is 1. So here we're ignoring the zeros. But now let's let var bar of V be the maximum number of sign changes that you would get if you were able to choose an arbitrary sign for each zero coordinate. So var bar of the same sequence, this is plus, this is minus, I'm allowed to give this whatever sign I want, so I could give it a plus, and then this is a minus. So the sign changes 3 times. Okay, so now there's a rather old theorem of Gontmacher and Krein, which says the following. So let V be an element of the Grassmannian, so it's a k-dimensional subspace of Rn. Then V lies in the totally non-negative part if and only if, for every vector x in V, the variation of x is bounded by k minus 1. So we're characterizing whether a k-element subset, a k-dimensional subspace, lies in the non-negative Grassmannian by looking at the sign changes of all the vectors in that subspace. And this condition is equivalent to var bar of elements in the orthogonal complement of V being greater than or equal to k. So we have two different characterizations of membership in the non-negative Grassmannian, and then there's two similar characterizations of membership in the totally positive Grassmannian. Okay, so here's a first theorem, and this is true for an arbitrary amplitudohedron. Tree amplitudohedron, the whole talk's about the tree amplitudohedron. So let W be in the totally positive Grassmannian of K plus M planes in N space. So this W I'm equating with Z. W is just the row span of your favorite Z. So the first statement is that your B amplitudohedron lies in the following subset of the Grassmannian of M planes in W. So every element in the B amplitudohedron, so every element X, satisfies the property that the sign variation of the vectors in X are bounded in between K and K plus M minus 1. So this is a containment. So this is a containment. But when M equals 1, one can show that the B amplitudohedron is precisely equal to vectors in W, whose var bar is precisely equal to K. And so this is a very, very simple, very, very simple description of the M equals 1 amplitudohedron. An open question is whether, in this first statement, whether this inclusion is an equality. We know it's true for M equals 1 and for K plus M equals N, but we don't know in general. Two questions that one could ask are, can we triangulate the M equals 1 amplitudohedron, and is it a ball? Okay, so let's let sine bar NK1 be all sine vectors with coordinates 0 plus minus, such that the var bar of sigma is k. So it's all sine vectors which change sign exactly k times, where I'm using the var bar definition, where zeros can get whatever sign I want them to be. And I'll let sine without the bar be all sine vectors where the var bar of sigma is k. So for example, if n is 5 and k is 2, then my sine vectors, which have to be of length 5, which change sign precisely 2 times, are... Oh, okay. This is actually incomplete because I have other sine vectors. Yeah, I should have thrown in more sine vectors that have zeros, but... Okay. So plus, 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 minus, plus. This changes sign 2 times. So does this one, this one, this one, this one, and this one. And these are all of the sine vectors of length 5 that have no zeros and which change sign exactly 2 times. And so we're going to, the natural thing to do is to decompose your m equals 1 amplituhedron based on what the sine vectors are. So this is a picture. This is going to be a picture of the m equals 1 amplituhedron. So let me explain. So the cyclic hyperplane arrangement, HNK in RK, is the collection of n hyperplanes, which we can are given by the rows of the n by k plus 1 Vandermonde matrix. So in particular, all of the maximal minors are positive. So so L1, L2, L3, L4, L5 are all hyperplanes in R2. So here my k is 2 and my n is 5. And I'm going to label the different regions in this arrangement based on whether they fall to one side or the other of a given hyperplane. So I'm thinking of this region out here as the all plus region. So being on this side of any given hyperplane is considered plus. So so let's talk about this region right here. So it's on the positive side of the line L1, but it's on the negative side of L2, L3, L4. But now here's L5, and this is on the positive side of L5. So each of these chambers, each of these maximal regions, is labeled based on which side of a given hyperplane it's on. And I'm only going to label, I'm only going to consider the bounded piece of this hyperplane arrangement, so the union of all of these bounded chambers, but I'm not going to worry about the things that are unbounded. And so then what we showed is that the amplituhedron is homeomorphic to the bounded complex of this hyperplane arrangement. So this really is a picture of the hyperplane, of the amplituhedron for m equals 1 and your analog of BCFW cells. So the things that are providing a triangulation of it are these different regions here. And if one combines our result with a result of Dong from maybe 10 years ago, it follows that the n equals 1 amplituhedron, the B or the A version, it doesn't matter because they're the same, is homeomorphic to a closed ball. And we have a complete cell decomposition of it, which we can describe in terms of permutations or Lie diagrams or, and in particular, this n equals 1 amplituhedron has n minus k minus 1 choose k cells, which are in bijection with these lattice paths, or with these Lie diagrams. You get your shape of the Lie diagram from this lattice path, and then you put a plus at the far right of every row. So these are the cells in the non-negative Grassmannian whose images in the amplituhedron give a triangulation of this. And these are some pictures for three dimensions. Well, the top row is 2 dimensions, and the bottom row is 3 dimensions. Okay, so now let me tell you what we know about m equals 4. So recall that Arkani, Hammett, and Trinka conjectured that the BCFW cells, these are 4K-dimensional cells, in the non-negative Grassmannian give a triangulation of the amplituhedron. So So their images should be disjoint and cover a dense subset. Okay, so what are the BCFW cells? So these are named after Brito, Cacciazzo, Feng, and Witten. And they are obtained by iterating a recurrence. There's many ways to do this recurrence, but we have a kind of favorite one, which I think is the favorite one of many of you. It's certainly a favorite one from the paper of Cunningham-Ed, Bourgelet, Cacciazzo, Trinca, Postenkopf, Gontroth. Yeah, everybody? So here's one combinatorial way to think about the BCFW recursion, the favorite way that we like to do it. So you start with your on-shell diagram, and I think of legs 1 and n as frozen. And now, for every boundary vertex which is not one of the frozen ones, I'm going to kind of blow up its adjacent vertex. So I can blow up a black vertex, and that means replace it with this sort of quadrilateral with four legs coming out. Or I can blow up a white vertex and replace it with the same quadrilateral. And this operation takes your k statistic to k plus 1, while this operation takes k to k. And both operations add a new leg, and so n goes up by 1. So if we blow up the vertex incident to 2, then this trivalent vertex gets replaced by this little square. And on the other hand, if we blow up the vertex adjacent to 3, then this trivalent vertex gets replaced by this square. And so at n equals 5, there's one BCFW cell for k equals 2 and one for k equals 3. And then if you keep going, then you get the following diagrams: 1 for k equals 2, 1 for k equals 4, and 3 for k equals 3. And this number 3 is the same 3 that also appeared in an example in Livia's talk. And right, and just to emphasize, there are many other ways to do the BCFW recursion, but this is the instance that we like to work with. And next I want to say, what is the relationship between these combinatorial objects and the triangulation statement? So after you take the permutation associated to those BCFW playback graphs, and after you apply a shift by 2, the new graphs or permutations should give cells. They give cells that should triangulate the amplitudehedron. So in other words, the 3 graphs for n equals 6 and k equals 3, so these 3 right here, after you apply a shift by 2, should correspond to 3 cells whose images triangulate this amplitudehedron. So the k was 3 in my previous picture, but after the shift by 2, the k goes down to 1. Okay. Now, just as a remark, it was pointed out in this paper of Cunningham-Ed, Bourgelet, Cacciazzo, Gontroth, Postenkopf, and Trinca that the number of BCFW cells that you get after you iterate the recurrence in your favorite way, which should conjecturally triangulate the amplitudehedron, is the Naryana number. In particular, it's the Naryana number n sub k plus 1 comma n minus 3, where n sub a b is given by this expression. So Naryana numbers are famous in combinatorics, and they refine Catalan numbers. Okay, so now if you're a mathematician and you're thinking, okay, I have no idea why these cells should triangulate the amplitudehedron, how could we start out trying to prove this? Well, the first obstacle is that this recursive description of cells together with a shift by 2 makes the problem a little bit, it looks difficult. I mean, if you want to prove that two things are disjoint, say, it would be nice to have an explicit description of them without having to sort of think about all ways of iterating the recurrence. So we would much prefer to have an explicit description of the cells that is not recursive and doesn't force us to do the shift by 2. Okay, so back to this Naryana number. So Naryana numbers can be interpreted in various ways. So let's let L sub n k 4 be the set of all pairs of non-crossing lattice paths which take steps west and south from x-coordinate n minus k minus 4, y-coordinate k, to 0, 0. So this is an example when n is L, k is 3, and this stands for the fact that m is 4 here. So I'm looking at non-crossing lattice paths which only go west and south, and I'm looking at pairs. So non-crossing means they can't cross over each other, although they are allowed to touch or to overlap. So it's very well known that the number of such pairs of lattice paths is this Naryana number, which is supposed to give us the cells in a triangulation. So if, for example, k is 1 and n is 6, then L sub n k 4 is the pairs of lattice paths that go from 1, 1 to 0, 0. So I have this pair, I have this pair, and I have this pair. It's precisely 3, and this is the same 3 that we saw in our previous examples. Okay, so then what we proved with Karp and Zheng is an explicit description of all of the BCFW cells for the amplituhedron. And the way we do it, the way we describe the BCFW cells, is to give a bijection from these pairs of lattice paths to the Le diagrams of the BCFW cells. So let me show how this is done. So here's a pair of lattice paths. Step zero is you read off kind of two Young diagrams from the pair. So the black one gives rise to this Young diagram, and the red one gives rise to this one. And for a reason we'll see momentarily, I want to put zeros inside the red one. So this outer Young diagram is going to wind up giving me the shape of my Le diagram. So all I do is I take Y sub L and I tack on another 4 columns. And now I'm going to put a plus at the left and right of every row. And then I'm going to use my red lattice path, which gave me this Young diagram filled with zeros. I'm now going to use this to start inserting zeros into my Le diagram. So I go from left to right, column by column. So let's start with the purple zeros. I'm going to take this column of zeros and I insert them greedily to the right in the Le diagram I'm building. So they have to stay together in the same column, so I can't move them past this plus. And then I do the same with the yellow, so that goes over here. And then I do the same with the red column, and that can move all the way over here. So I'm putting in zeros. And now I'm going to put 2 more pluses in every row, justified to the right. So this is the shape we built already, and now I'm going to put 2 pluses as far to the right as possible. So over here, they go like this. In this row, they go on either side of the zeros I inserted, and over here, they go right here, and then I fill up the rest with zeros. And you'll see that by construction, I've built some kind of zero plus diagram that has precisely 4 pluses in every row, and that is the reason we wanted to do that was we wanted to get something that had dimension 4k, because we're trying to we're trying to describe the BCFW cells. Now, technically, the object I constructed is not a Le diagram, because, for example, I have a zero here with a plus here and a plus here. But there's some simple moves you can do to get rid of that. Or alternatively, there's a very simple combinatorial algorithm for reading off your permutation from this diagram. So it's not so easy, but it's completely explicit. So this is a completely explicit description of the BCFW cells. And one does not have to do a shift by 2 anymore. This has already incorporated the shift by 2. Okay, so now let's step back and look at all of the numerology that's known so far in terms of triangulations of the amplituhedron. So for m equals 1, we showed that a collection of n minus 1 choose k cells give a triangulation of the amplitudohedron. And the paper, which was posted by Arkani Hamid, Trink, and Thomas a day or two ago, shows that for m equals 2, you triangulate the amplitudohedron with n minus 2 choose k cells. So here I'm talking about the top dimensional cells in your triangulation. This is the Narayana number again, and here this is the conjecture that the BCFW cells, which have cardinality Narayana, triangulate the amplitudohedron. And for k equals 1, you get a cyclic polytope, and it's known how to the number of simplices in a triangulation. So a natural question is, well, is there a formula that should generalize all of these facts? And the answer is yes. So let me show you what this is. So let n of ABC be the following very simple product. So it's a product over three indices I, j, and k, and we have I plus j plus k minus 1 over I plus j plus k minus 2. So this is a very nice number which is symmetric in A, B, and C. And now we have some conjectures. And, well, I put some confidence level next to them since just to indicate we're not 100% sure. But just because the conjecture is so clean and so nice, it makes us have a fairly high degree of confidence, even though we don't have a whole lot of evidence to back it up. So for even M, the conjecture is that there's a cell decomposition of this amplitudohedron which has n of k, n minus k, minus m, m over 2 top dimensional cells of dimension km. So this is a conjecture for even m. So we feel sort of 90% confident in that, maybe. I don't know, I just sort of came up with 90%. I didn't discuss with collaborators. And then for odd m, you could make the following conjecture, which fits all the data. That your amplitudohedron should have a triangulation into n of k, n minus k, m plus 1 over 2 top dimensional cells. And these conjectures generalize everything that's known or conjectured so far. There's something that's kind of nice about this statement, or anyway, it's sort of interesting about this statement, is that n of a, b, c is symmetric in a, b, and c. So if the conjectures are true, then that would suggest that there's a symmetry between k and n minus m minus k, and also k and m over 2, and also this and this. And for k and n minus m minus k, it's known that the amplitudohedron has a symmetry, which is related to reversing colors, black and white, in on-shell diagrams. Okay, so these numbers n of ABC are really important numbers in combinatorics, which with many, many interpretations, also connections to integrability. So what does n of ABC count? So I'll just give you a few of the interpretations. One interpretation is it's a collection of C non-crossing paths from A, B to 0, 0, taking steps west and south. Another interpretation is it's the number of plane partitions in an A by that fit inside an A by B by C box. So here I drew an example of a plane partition. So just think of an A by B by C room, and you're stacking blocks in the corner. So you can see your stack of blocks here. And they just need to fit they have to kind of increase in height as you go towards the corner. Another interpretation, which is coming from chemistry, that people in chemistry were very interested in, these Kekulé structures. In combinatorial language, this is simply perfect matchings of this hexagon-shaped benzenoid with parameters A, B, and C. So I take a bunch of hexagons and I glue them together into this roughly hexagon-shaped thing with parameters A along this way, C along this way, B along that way, and then A, B, and A, C, and B. A perfect matching just means, so if you imagine there's a vertex, six vertices in every hexagon, perfect matching just means I take a distinguished collection of edges of my graph such that every vertex is incident to precisely one of my distinguished edges. So the distinguished edges are shown in red, and you'll see every vertex is incident to precisely one of them. So conjecturally, there's a triangulation of the amplitudohedron with top-dimensional cells in bijection with, well, collections of some non-crossing paths, or plane partitions inside a box, or some perfect matchings of a hexagon-shaped benzenoid, and some others. Now, from the point of view of combinatorics, these objects have an additional very nice structure of distributive lattice, which I won't really give you the details, but it's some kind of very nice partially ordered set. So this is, so let's just look at this graph here. So I've shown all perfect matchings of this kind of benzenoid graph, and I labeled the faces A, B, C, and D, and so I've connected them by edges whenever the two matchings differ by a flip. So for example, here's a matching and here's a matching, and they're precisely the same except I switched the edges around C. And these two matchings are precisely the same except I switched the matchings around D, and so on. And so so the combinatorics sees an additional structure, additional relationships among these objects, and it would be really interesting to know what that means for the amplitudohedron. One would kind of hope it's telling you something about how the cells are attached to each other. Okay, so now our original goal was to try to understand something about triangulating the amplitudohedron. And so so once we had this explicit description of BCFW cells, we started trying to show that images are actually disjoint in the amplitudohedron. So we succeeded to do this for k equals 2. I think our methods should generalize, but it was kind of a lot of work, so at the moment we only do k equals 2. So using our description of cells, we classified the cells for k equals 2 into sort of 9 classes and found for each one a distinguished basis. We were looking for bases where the number of non-zero entries was as small as possible. So you can sort of categorize all your BCFW cells into 9 classes and write down corresponding bases. And now what can we do? So recall that this amplitudohedron is the image of your Z map of the non-negative Grassmannian. And now what we showed is that when k equals 2, the images of any two distinct BCFW cells are actually disjoint. And so let me just say the beginning of the idea behind trying to prove this. So it's all going back to sign variation. So take vector spaces, V1 and V2, in a non-negative Grassmannian, and let's suppose they lie in two different BCFW cells. So what do we know based on sign variation? Well, the fact that these things come from the non-negative Grassmannian implies, based on Gapmacher and Krein, that for every vector in our vector space, the sign variation is small. It's bounded above by k minus 1. So that's one thing that we know based on the positivity of our matrix in the non-negative Grassmannian. Now we want to use the positivity of the Z matrix as well. Okay, now suppose that the amplitudohedron map sent V1 and V2 to the same point in the amplitudohedron. So suppose the corresponding cells were not disjoint. So what that means is that V1 minus V2 is in the kernel of Z, and now that implies, by the second part of Gantt-Macker and Krein, that for every non-zero vector in V1 and in V1 minus V2, the sign variation is big. It's bounded below by k plus 4. And so basically the positivity of, so if you think of your amplitudehedron as the C dot Z map, the positivity of the C and the positivity of the Z are telling you two different things. One is bounding variation below and one is bounding variation above. And you need to work with these two pieces of information to try to get a contradiction. So that's the approach to try to show that things are disjoint. Okay, so I'll stop there, and part one is already on the archive, and part two hopefully will finish in the next weeks.
Start with Yaroslav.
So I have two questions about this NABC. So the BCFW recursion relations kind of suggest that there is also a recursive formula for them. So is there any known? Then you write NABC in terms of products of lower NABCs.
That's a good question, which we looked at a bit, and it's not obvious. I don't know. It may be possible. But I think we don't know. Yeah. I mean, we looked very closely at the Naryana recurrence, and it's not quite obvious how to generalize that. But I don't know. It would be nice.
Mm-hmm. And then the other question, is there any one parametric generalization of these NABCs which would
also
cover loops?
Oh. I don't know. There's a kind of Q statistic that you can throw in that corresponds to like the height of your plane partition, or well, some statistic on your plane partition. There is a natural generalization, but I don't know if it would be the right one to deal with loops.
So I like this conjecture about the number of cells in the BCFW triangulations. Or conjecture triangulations, but you mentioned earlier that the not during your talk, but that the that you had found examples of triangulations of the amplitudehedron that were involved fewer numbers of terms.
For m equals that's right. That's
for
right.
M equals two, I guess.
For m equals one.
One.
And it should probably work for m equals two also.
Okay. So do you have any sense of how one might prove or So it seems there's a conjecture that the minimal triangulation for m equals 4 is the number of, is this Naryana number. But I don't know, do you have any thoughts about the existence of shorter triangulations?
I don't know. I mean, right. So for m equals 1, it's not too hard to sort of take our triangulation and kind of glue some things together to get a smaller triangulation. But the smaller triangulation is sort of bad in the sense that two maximal cells may not intersect in a lower dimensional cell. So it's sort of, you could still call it a triangulation, but it loses some of the niceness of the original one.
Thank you for the very nice talk. I just the following question. I know that this actually, these plane partitions and also these kind of honeycomb lattice and so on, I mean, there's a very strong connection to integrability. In fact, there's a
six-vertex model.
Six-vertex model. Have you explored this?
No, not yet. Yeah, but it seems very, it seems kind of tantalizing. Yeah. Right, right. That's right, that's right. Yeah, yeah.
So I have what might be an excessively technical question, which is you have this procedure for writing down a Lie diagram from a pair of paths, but it doesn't seem like it's completely closed form. Like the rule is you have your tableau and you fill it with pluses and zeros, and then you have to do local moves until it becomes a Lie diagram.
Right.
So is there a short sort of brief reason for me to see that you're never going to accidentally sort of land on the same thing twice?
Oh yeah, one yeah. That it's not too hard. It's not too hard to show. We did check that.
I mean, I'm sure it's true. I just was wondering, like intuitively.
Yeah. You can also. I mean, it's possible. A nicer way to think about it is to. I mean, If you don't want to deal with lemmas, then you can read off the permutation explicitly from this diagram.
Okay, so it's not bad to say that you.
So you don't actually have to use those lemmas, but for Le diagram aficionados, I felt like I should kind of insert that step anyway, so they wouldn't freak out. But you can read off, for people who don't like those things, you can read off the permutation very easily just from that diagram before the sexual extra moves.
Nima had a question.
So of your three descriptions of the NABC, the last two are manifestly symmetric in ABC, but the first one, which is the one that you're sort of associating with...
Yeah, that's right. That one is not so symmetric.
That's not. Is there an easy argument why it is symmetric directly from the non-crossing paths?
I don't know one off the top of my head. And also, our Le diagram description does not exhibit the threefold symmetry. It only has a sort of obvious twofold symmetry.
That is definitely a feature of the physics, that BCFW forces you to break parity, but the final result is parity symmetric. And your k to n minus k minus m is parity, or is the amplitude and generalization of parity. The other ones are more interesting. They're like the flipping between the things involving m. I don't think we have any immediate physics interpretation for it, but at least one of them we certainly know BCFW breaks, and the answer has. So it's very interesting that. But that's why I was wondering if there's a sort of a bijection from. Is there a bijection?
Well, so actually it shouldn't.
Sorry? Is that right?
So it's actually easy. So there's. Yeah, I didn't choose nice diagrams such that they're in bijection with each other, but the bijections are pretty easy. So you can associate a lattice path to, you can sort of imagine your...
Just by projecting on one of the planes, right?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so you can get lattice paths that way, and then you have to kind of squish them together.
Right.
And then these are like dual graphs of each other. So there's easy bijections between all of them.
Okay, cool.
Yeah. I don't see any more questions. So let's thank our speaker once more.